Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Jeff Pedowitz of the Pedowitz Group. Welcome to Ignite Demand Generation on Blog Talk Radio. Every month, this innovative series delivers proven ideas, techniques, and examples on how you can deliver a measurable contribution to your company. The content for this series is provided by a wide array of nationally recognized experts. Each issue, whether through email series or Blog Talk Radio, provides you with practical insights you won't find anywhere else. For more information on Ignite Demand Generation, please visit our website at www.pedowitzgroup.com. And now for today's program, I'd like to welcome Pete Weinmiller, Vice President of Guest Relations for the NBA's Seattle Sonics and the WNBA's Seattle Storm. Pete began his career with the Seattle Supersonics in 1995 as Director of Sales. In that position, he was responsible for overseeing all ticket sales for the Sonics and the Continental Indoor Soccer League World Champion Seattle SeaDogs. Since that time, he's been instrumental in bringing the Seattle Storm to Seattle by selling a number of pre-ticket deposits and season ticket sales. He's taken on huge roles within the organization in managing guest relations, executive suite services, restaurant club, and housekeeping departments. He's been recognized by 1-to-1 Magazine as a customer champion, been cited by David Stern of the NBA as a true thought leader in the space, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show today. Welcome, Pete.
Jeff, hi. Thanks for inviting me to be a part of the program.
Oh, our pleasure. So, Pete, you've had some tremendous success out there. What do you think your secret is?
You know, I've had a great team around me, first and foremost, a lot of people that put me in a position to be successful and a lot of folks that joined me as I was trying to get to the next step. So it's all been about building team and having some talented people, in some cases more talented than myself, join forces with me. So that's been a blessing. It's been a joy, and it continues today.
So, and certainly in professional sports, I mean, you can't always control the ebb and flow of the team, but yet you're still responsible for driving loyalty. How do you do that when you don't have control over the product?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting industry. You know, it's a product that is potentially fractured when you actually purchase that product, meaning that if I buy a ticket to go to a basketball game, I want to see a certain team win, hopefully the home team, but see a certain team win or a certain player play. I can't guarantee that. And it's much different than any other retail industry, and I consider our business to be retail. But if I go to Starbucks and get a bad cup of coffee, they make a mistake in making my favorite drink, then typically what happens, the barista says, you know what, let me do it again. I'll make it for you one more time, and hopefully it's right the time. I can't do that with my business. If a person comes to a basketball game and says, you know what, again, didn't see my team win, didn't see my player play, I can't bring the team back on the floor, obviously, the next day and replay that game. So we are in a very interesting industry in terms of not really having a consistent element to the product, but that really is the trick, is trying to be consistent. So we use a phrase all the time, is that we can't control what happens on the floor, but we can control what happens in the stands. And what happens in the stands is taking care of our guests, as we refer to them, customers, but our guests, and trying to be consistent in that experience. And I think that's been our secret sauce, is working really at bat, trying to figure out that no matter where you're at within our facility, that you're in turn having a positive experience. Easier said than done.
So what are some examples of where you have created positive experiences for your fans in the arena?
Well, one of the things we've been very good at doing the last few years is trying to create an environment with our staff, our frontline staff. Just so you know, for us to play an NBA basketball game in Seattle, we need 510 employees to go out there and show up for work and be in those positions that you would see when you go to a sporting event. Ushers, security, food and beverage, all those different individuals. And we need over 500 people actually to serve in those functions for us to be able to actually roll the ball out and play a game. One thing we've done with all of those individuals is said to them, you know what, we're looking for leaders. And if you're going to ask the person to be a leader in your organization, you really have to define that, because if I was asked your entire listening audience today to write down their definition of leadership, we'd have a lot of different definitions. They'd all be positive, I would hope, but they'd all be very different. And so with that, we tell people what leadership means. And leadership means to us is being a problem solver. If you're going to be a leader, you're going to be a problem solver. And the cool thing about that definition, it allows people to have that as a part of their job responsibility, not as something that's tied into a position or a promotion or a title. So they don't have to work their way up to being a leader or get promoted into being a leader. They can come to work every day knowing that's a responsibility in their job to be a leader. And so we have people to do that. And the definition of being a leader is being a problem solver, we're looking for 510 problem solvers, people who will come to work and solve problems. And we all know that's a big part of everyday work, is trying to overcome challenges, solve problems, doing those kind of things in a way where we're successful. And the kind of problems we would have would be, well, soup to nuts, but I'll give you a good example. You're working a basketball game with me, Jeff, and we happen to see a fan walk up on us that maybe has spilled some food on. We're not sure why that happened. You know, it's a three-hour basketball game. We don't have a lot of time to figure things out sometimes. These are retail experiences, the moments that guests have with us when they're in turn being a part of our experience. And so we want to find out, how can we make this person feel better about their situation? Now, here's a fan of the game. They have food on them. What's happened? No one's going to give you a book when you come and be an employee of the Sonics or Storm that says, turn to page 23, paragraph 6, here's how you resolve a problem if you see a guest that has something spilled on them. We're going to ask you as a frontline staff member to solve that problem. And whatever the answer is, very well, we believe, is the best answer anybody can come up with, because you know more about that situation in the moment than anybody else. Of course, you're going to ask questions. You're going to ask the person, how can I help you? But the options to you are wide open. It might be as simple as sending a person off to the restroom, saying, hey, there's paper towels and water in there, obviously. Let's get you taken care of. Or it could be actually saying to that person, can I buy you another meal? Or can I bring you down to the team shop and get you a sweatshirt? And doing that without having to worry about any money exchanging hands or paperwork exchanging hands. Simply having that frontline person so they have the power to solve that problem based on how they think it should be resolved. And the reason why that's so important is there's a Bain study out there that talks about that 70% of consumers who have a problem with a retailer will come back and do business with that retailer again if the problem they have is resolved in their favor. And that's a pretty decent number. I don't know if a lot of people ever argue with me on that, but that's off. I think that's a reasonable number. But here's the cool thing about it. There's a 25% lift. Now 95% of those individuals will come back and do business with you again if the problem you had with the retailer is resolved in your favor. And it's resolved in the moment, on the spot. You don't have to talk to a manager, call back tomorrow, throw a piece of paper out, wait for somebody. You get your situation taken care of right then and there. And that's what this guest care leadership thing is all about. So when you talk about some things we've done right, I think that's been a real strong initiative that we put forth every year through our trainings to make sure that's alive and well. And we have found that to be true. It's what guests are looking for. And the cool thing about it, it puts loyalty in their mind, but it also empowers frontline staff, which then gives them loyalty in terms of having an environment where they feel valued. And let's be honest with each other. When you solve people's problems, it's a lot of fun. And that's the great part about our job, is that we think we have fun. And one of the ways we do that is by giving employees the ability to do that, is to solve problems.
So I think it's fair to say that no one expects you guys to be perfect. They just expect you to care. And as long as they're showing that you care, I mean, they're going to respect that, because nobody's perfect.
We're not trying to. We talk about a program we have called CLICK, CLICK, and we can talk about that later on if you want to. But the whole idea of CLICK is the dictionary definition it would be to be successful. And so we're just trying to click with our guests. And really, what that is providing fundamental guest care consistently. It's not delivering babies or performing CPR. It's just basically just doing fundamental things in a consistent manner. And I believe that's what customers in America are looking for. And unfortunately, that's not the case in a lot of places they do business. But I think they're looking for those basics being delivered in a way that are simple, done right, and first and foremost, done consistently. And I
now
think
how
there's
do
so
you...
much ahead of that.
How do you extend this approach outside of your immediate area? So for your fans across the country, maybe they're from Seattle and move away, or you just have fans that are following the team, how do you build loyalty outside of those 510 employees?
Well, technology obviously has allowed us to do that. I mean, people anywhere in the world can tap into what's happening with our teams, and that's a great way to keep abreast of any sports team that you have a love for, whether you're raised as a kid in Boston, and you have a love for the Celtics, but now you live halfway around the world, you have that ability to stay in touch. So we have a great staff of individuals every day working on those types of mediums that allow fans to tap into what we're doing and do that in a way that it's rich content and exciting technology that allows that to come to be. So that's probably the best answer I have for you. I'm hoping when fans come to games, and no matter where they're coming from, whether they're local or just maybe a couple hours down the road in another part of Washington, that they consider themselves a part of what we have going on in terms of being a part of a positive experience. So, you know, our butter obviously is our season ticket holders, the folks that are willing to buy tickets up front, but everybody who comes to a game is a valued guest and is someone we want to hopefully come back. One of our strong statements we make a lot in terms of our frontline staff is really this, is that we're trying to create repeat guests profitably. That really is what it comes down to. And so everyone who comes in that building, whether they're a season ticket holder or a fan for the first time, is a guest in our building.
Do you take a different approach, though, for a season ticket holder versus group sales versus a suite? Do you do anything different to create memorable experiences, or do you try and take an even approach for everybody?
Well, one of the things I like to say is you can treat all of your guests differently as long as you treat them all well. So we do treat guests differently, unquestionably. Buying 43 games up front is going to get different benefits, different experiences. I have a different relationship with us than somebody who bought a ticket and is coming to the game one time. But if not to say they're not going to be treated well, whether you're the person there just for one night or if you're there buying 43 games.
Okay. So are there some examples that you've learned from over the years that were bad experiences or customers brought them to your attention and then you were able to turn them around?
Well, yeah, by all means. That's the interesting thing about our business is when we used to have an ad agency that would ask us the question every year when they were doing business with us, and they did some great work, but they would say to us, tell me why people did not renew their season tickets this year. And that is an incredibly long list. Because the only two universals I know of, in my opinion, that are really a part of our business where everyone, no matter who you are, would say, you know what, that affects me, are really two things. One, the win and loss record of the team, and I can't control that. You know, no matter how much you pay players or have fans root for players, you can't control what happens on the floor. Basketball games are dramas. Don't know who's going to win until the final buzzer. And the other one is a statement or a my friend Joanna Brandy, who's a consultant in Florida, uses called the F factor, the feeling factor. If somebody in the organization created a positive or less than positive feeling in me. And those are the two things, the win and loss record and the F factor, that I believe are the two universals in our business. All the rest of the stuff is really based on your personal preference. For example, I like bobbleheads. I like to have the giveaways. I like the things you give me when I come to the door. That might be something I want more of, and you, Jeff, might think, you know what, I'm not into that. Or you may say, you know what, I like a healthy food choice. I like to have some more vegetarian selection when I come and buy food, because a couple of the commodities that you have when you come to a game is you have to park and you typically eat. So there's a lot of focus on that. And I may say, you know what, I'm fine with the stadium that we always have, hot dogs and pretzels and Pepsi. Those are all different personal preferences. One, I think we do a good job of paying attention to across the board. But it's really those two that I think we focus in on, and the one we can't do anything about because, again, it's the play on the floor. But it's the other one. How do people feel like they're being treated when they come in the building? How are they getting their challenges and problems resolved? How are they, in turn, getting the information they need? That's the focus that we really need to look at and work on each and every day and trying to get better at.
Now, what about the sponsorship side of the house? I mean, certainly you clearly drive revenue through ticket sales, but also a big revenue source for the organization is in-arena advertising and sponsorship. What kind of experiences do your sponsors expect, and do you manage that any differently than what you do in-arena with your fans?
Well, that's not really my responsibility is not a part of my responsibility at all in terms of my role, but I can tell you that how we approach sponsorships is that they're all customized relationships. People associate their brands with sports teams because they want to sell more goods and services by having that relationship with a sporting enterprise. And so how our folks go about that is they customize every proposal because what they offered up to one organization might not be even close to the other organization needs to be successful. So, again, it's all about trying to find out what are your needs and how can we address those.
Okay, so now you mentioned that you don't have any big handbook, but you talked about empowering your employees, and you also talked about creating repeat customer experiences profitably. So what's the balance, what's the science behind in empowering employees to make decisions at every level within the organization, yet at the same time, you know, not giving away the farm and ensuring that employees aren't going to do something that's going to jeopardize the organization?
Well, a good example of the creating repeat guest profitably scenario would be that, again, if you and I are working in that basketball game and we see that fan walk up with the food spilled on them, and again, they're walking upright, they have their act together, they look like they just had a bad experience, someone bumped into them, there was a spill, something went wrong, and we want to find out, obviously, what the catalyst for that was, but also we want to make sure we take care of them as well specifically. If you said, you know, Pete, I'm going to go ahead and send this person off to the restroom. I know where the closest men's room is, if it's a gentleman we're talking to, and so off to the restroom this person goes, and you know where to send them because, again, you have knowledge of the building, you know your stuff. But you also say to them, you know what, I also want to get you another meal, another order of nachos. That might be your dinner for the night, and I want to go ahead and do that. That might be your way of defining a repeat guest profitably. It may not involve even doing the food. It might just be enough to send that person off to the restroom. But you have the choice to determine what is it that's going to create that repeat guest feeling in that person. And you can go ahead and monitor that based on what you think has to be done. If I say to you, Jeff, you know what, Jeff, I'm going to send the person off to the restroom. I know also where the closest men's room is. But when that person comes back out, I'm going to offer them 43 games of free food the entire season. And that would be a situation where you would have then, well, probably not a very profitable environment, because what you'd be doing would be offering up an opportunity to, yes, create a repeat guest, but not profitably. So that's the line that has to be drawn, is what the frontline employee has to have to make that decision. What needs to be done to create a repeat guest profitably? And that is really based on the trust that we give staff to go ahead and make that decision. Now, staff will say, what if I make a mistake? What if I do something I think could have been done differently? We will take the philosophy as we would take any philosophy in terms of feedback we get. If it's not as positive as you'd like, would be that, hey, you know what, a complaint is a gift. It's free consulting. We'll take that information as free consulting. Hey, you know what, thanks for sharing with us that you might do it differently next time. Let's all learn from that. And it becomes that consulting that we can then share with other employees to really learn from how we might attack that problem or that situation in a better way next time. And that happens. You know, it raises all boats in the harbors when you have that kind of transparency or communication in the building.
So as organizations begin to put this as part of their strategy, create more memorable experiences for their customers, what three things would you give marketers and their teams as advice for the best ways of going about to set up a program like this?
Well, first and foremost, empower frontline staff to make decisions in the moment. John Goodman, who runs an organization called TARP, a think tank on the East Coast, talks about one of the major objectives, if not the sole objective, in having successful experiences with businesses when you in turn are trying to have something resolved or just basically trying to create a transaction, is that businesses do not allow employees to be truly successful because they don't provide the tools and the resources and the freedom to make decisions that allow those things to happen and be accomplished. I don't have the words to share with you that have enough bravado in them, I guess, to say what I want to say to those who are listening, that if you can empower your frontline staff to be problem solvers in the moment, I think you'll see the proof in the pudding that employees will not become drunk with power. They are to be trusted, and they know more about the situation often than you do. And if you can have that philosophy, it's amazing to see what things happen in the context of your business. And creating repeat guests is what I'm talking about, putting hard cash in your pocket by having more individuals come back and do business with you because you've implemented that philosophy with your staff. And even more importantly, having a staff that's engaged, feels trusted, feels valued, and is having fun doing all the things we're talking about. So that's number one. The number two is I really think the secret sauce in this whole experience is being consistent. We talk about exceeding expectations, knocking it out of the park, all of those ways that you can explain how to really go above and beyond. But, you know, what happens if you're not consistent and you then have people doing great things, but those who are not in a position to be successful, not doing the things that we'd like them to do, then all the things they're doing really cancels out all the things that would be defined as great. So the safety net really has to be at this point where you have a consistent environment. You know that you never fall below that. And then if you have those individuals who hit it out of the park and have a great experience with their guests, great, more power to them. But being consistent, I really believe, is where you have to be looking to get to and asking that question, how that happens. And third one is just trying to create a fun environment for your staff. I think fun can be addressed a lot of different ways, and I'm not to say you should be irresponsible by trying to create a business culture that is all about fun, but one way to define fun is to take your job seriously and take yourself lightly. To create an atmosphere where people can be feeling good about who they are, getting their work done, and having relationships that make a lot of sense. And I'll say that's easier said than done, but I think it's crucial to how you build a personality of a company, which also might be defined as a culture.
That's very good advice. So I guess finally, I mean, it still comes down to measurement at the end of the day. So over the years, have you been able to develop a correlation between the investments you've made in empowering your staff and building better moments and revenue?
Yeah, by all means. I mean, the number one metric for us, obviously, is season ticket renewals. Season holders, again, are individuals willing to put money up front, purchasing 43 games. That's our entire preseason, regular season schedule that we sell as a season ticket. And it's those individuals who are able to actually go out and purchase those tickets up front. And that number is a metric that is valuable to us, maybe more than any other number, is what is the percentage of those individuals coming back. Now, that number is skewed through a lot of different methods because or situations or variables. One is our win-loss record, obviously. You'd like to believe that winning solves a lot of problems. So if we win more games, you might say, you know what, you're probably going to have a higher renewal rate. No one's going to argue that. But you also want to believe that if you're not winning a lot of games and you're providing that guest care philosophy, that guest care leadership, that you would have a lower renewal rate if you didn't put forth that effort, because that effort hopefully is showing up those individuals that said they wanted to be a part of it, they're even feeling more confident, but also those who said, you know what, I'm on the fence, saying, you know what, I'm going to be a part of it because of the way I was treated and the experiences I had. Our secret shopping is really, for us, what we spend so much time on. We, in turn, have an outside vendor that comes in and shops our building as a third-party observation, and we spend an immense amount of time, resources, and energy on evaluating that. We are students of our secret shopping. Metrically looking at that in a way that says, how are we doing this year compared to last year? How are we doing this month compared to last month? We're big believers in you only shop what you train. So we have a very, very formidable training program that goes out and says, this is what we're looking for, and then we tell our shoppers, tell us how we're doing. So that program in itself has been tremendous. And why do we shop? We shop to catch people doing great things. We want to reward our employees for doing what we believe is the way we should conduct business, but also to ask ourselves, how can we do better?
Excellent. Well, Pete, I really want to thank you for being on the show today. And I'm sure that everyone that's listening will find this very insightful. And we look forward to seeing you at the upcoming CRMA National Conference in August.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks again for the invitation. It was fun having the conversation with you. And I do look forward to meeting you here in a few months.
You bet. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.